Welcome to Charlotte Readers Podcast, where authors give voice to their written words. This is the show where we meet Charlotte area authors and those who visit the Queen City, and we hear them read their work. Our sponsor from the very beginning has been and continues to be Park Road Books, the oldest and only independent bookstore in Charlotte. If you love books, Park Road Books is the place for you. Please stop by the store to buy local for your next great read. The store is right there in Park Road Shopping Center with the big blue letters. Speaking of Park Road Books, today we have a bonus episode featuring a conversation with our sponsor about running an independent bookstore and working with book lovers and authors, and we also take a peek at some of their spring and summer book suggestions. They will give voice to their written words of others. And when they're done, you'll have a list of some engaging books to buy at Park Road Books, of course, for yourself and your loved ones. You can find out more about the podcast at our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com. But enough with the preface to this episode. Let's get to the good stuff. I'm your host, Landis Wade. Thank you for listening. We visit today with Sally Brewster, the owner of Park Road Books, and Shauna Morgan, one of the members of the staff. Many of you know about Park Road Books, but you may not know the whole story, and you may not know what it's like to run an independent bookstore. We're going to talk today about the story of Park Road Books, the bookstore business, and about some books for you to read this spring and summer. It's often said that variety is a spice in life. That's true in running a bookstore, and it's true about books you might find interesting to read. In this episode, we'll taste a variety of books and the suggestions that go with them from the book-minded folks at Park Road Books. You can listen without taking notes because the full list of book suggestions is going to be in the show notes at charlottereaderspodcast.com. Okay, time to turn to page one. Sally, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Landis. Thank you so much.
Shauna, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So, Sally, I said in the opening that Park Road Books is the oldest and only independent bookstore in Charlotte. What does that mean to you to be the oldest and only independent bookstore? I mean, do you feel like you're like the guardian of some important species that might die off, that you have some responsibility to keep this thing going? I mean, or is there something else that drives you?
This is a labor of love. I absolutely can't imagine not going to Park Road Books every day, every weekday, and opening up and seeing our wonderful staff and all the books and new books coming in. But it makes me really sad. I think a city the size of Charlotte should have more independent, full-service independent bookstores.
So, Shauna, you're there 5 days a week. You're one of the staff people.
Yeah, one of the full-times.
What's it like to work for Sally? We won't go there.
You can tell the truth. Don't worry. I'm the third child. I'm used to the bad news.
Well, I think something that Sally does really well is encourage us to do what we need to do. Like, we are welcome, we are encouraged to branch out from our normal book reading. We're encouraged to try new things and to try to bring a full demographic to the store. And so I think Sally does a really good job of driving us forward, although she does tend to be a little bit controlling about what she likes at her store. But
she's the boss. She's in
charge. Absolutely. And usually she's right, which you is, can, you, oh, you know.
you can get your own bookstore, Sean, if you want to be in charge.
Exactly. Right? And usually the suggestion is something that she's heard before and has tried before. Right.
And she knows it doesn't work.
Absolutely. But she's a very encouraging boss.
So remember that on her review now.
But that's also the reason why I'm not the manager. So.
So we want to talk just a moment about the kinds of things that independent bookstores can do for readers that Amazon can't do. Okay. You help people find books, right?
Oh, we do. Every day. That's our joy.
I mean, an algorithm can't do what we do.
Yeah. And how do you do it? I mean, so I come in, I don't know what I want to read, but I kind of have an idea. You pick my brain. What do you do?
We say, what are some of the books that you've read that you loved, and what are some of the books that you've read recently that you've disliked? Yeah. And that way it gives us a little indication of what direction to go in. And the best thing about the store is we have somebody for everybody, reading-wise, genre-wise. We group think. You know, I've struck out with this customer. What else can you think of for great horror that has short stories or, you know, something out of the norm? And we also have a money-back guarantee. If you try the book and you don't like it, bring it back within 30 days, and we'll give you back your money.
Long as it's not dog-eared too much, right?
Yeah, we don't want any coffee stains on it. If the dog has taken a bite out of it.
Highlighting, right?
Yeah, highlighting.
Now, people may not know, you also do things that Amazon does that people may not realize. I mean, you can order books for people, right, Shauna?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people, what, they call you or stop by and just say, hey, I want to order this book?
We order books every day. They usually come and just 2 to 3 business days, with a few exceptions, but for the most part, that's our standard. There's no shipping costs because we get it sent straight to the store.
All right, people, remember that. You can pick up the phone or stop by and they'll order it too. And Sally, you do something interesting too. This audiobook phenomenon, right? Y'all even got that for people, right?
Absolutely.
How does that work? Talk about that.
We've been partnering with Libro. Mm-hmm. So it's an alternative for people that want to read or listen to books instead of reading them. It's very popular. It's really an expanding market.
It's a really great app. It works just like the big one, Audible, where you download an app, you purchase the books through their website, and they download straight to your phone. Mm-hmm. The app is free. The way that the membership works is it's $14.99 a month. If your first month for signing up is only 99 cents, and you get a book for 99 cents.
And the thing I like about it is Libro helps support independent bookstores, mm-hmm. right? So it's a way for people to support an independent bookstore if they still want to listen to an audio book.
Absolutely.
Right?
We get a nice little, I wouldn't say it's a huge amount of money every month, but we love the people at Libro, and I listen to audiobooks on my commute, on trips, love nonfiction.
And podcasts. You listen to Charlotte Reader's podcast.
I like it's a small company. If I email somebody, I know exactly who I'm speaking to. It's really easy to sign up. It's just libro.fm/parkroadbooks.
All right, good. Well, we're going to get to your book suggestions, some spring and summer book reads in just a minute. Before we do that, I know the two of you have heard of the book Save the Cat Writes a Novel, right? Yeah, writers, authors are doing this thing. I thought we would use that just a second to explore the story of Park Road Books. Let me tell you how we're going to do that, okay? Because I hadn't warned you about this. So first of all, let me tell the listeners about this book if they hadn't heard. Save the Cat Writes a Novel. I heard about it at a Charlotte Lit class on humor writing with author Tracy Curtis, who, by the way, appears in season one of the podcast. She recommended the book, and I've heard about it, so I went and read it. Originally, Save the Cat was a book about the formula for writing plays. Save the Cat, the novel by Jessica Brody, which I'm sure they can get at Parker Books, talks about how to apply this formula to writing novels. Now, some would say, hey, a formula? Hey, no, we shouldn't have a formula. That's a dirty word. But really, it means a structure that over time, people who read have found compelling, right?
Correct.
It's got three acts, and so there are always three acts to any good story. So why the name Save the Cat for the title? Well, this is the fun part I like about this book, because stories involve an arc where the protagonist starts out as one thing. Maybe they're brooding, demented, shallow, whatever, but over time they change. And for the change to work, sometimes the protagonist is really an asshole early on, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and so for the first 10 or 15, 20 pages, you're like, I can't stand this person. So what do they come up with to make you stay with this person? Well, they had him save a cat from a tree or something. You say, oh, he's an asshole, but he likes cats, you know? So that's where Save the Cat comes from. So I thought it'd be fun to think about Park Road Books as part of this three-act play. As I said, I didn't warn you about this. But so act one, usually in act one, there's an inciting incident, a life-changing event that happens to the hero that sets them on a path. Okay, Sally, you're the hero here. What was the inciting incident for you in starting Park Road Books?
I left the publishing world when my company got bought out by another company. And I had envisioned my life in this publishing world, this publishing company, and all of a sudden I got thrown for a spin. But luckily, I knew John Berenger, who owned The Little Professor, which is now Park Road Books, and he said, come work for me while I find a buyer for the store. And so that was my life-changing incident, was moving from the publishing world into the real world.
Right, right. And also in this act one of a book, there's usually some debate that goes on in the hero's head. Should I do this? Is this too dangerous? Will it be worth it? Did you have doubts at that point in time when you're about to buy this store about
Oh, man, I told John Berenger that anybody that would buy a bookstore now is insane, and yeah. I was that crazy person.
And what year was that?
It was 1999 that I agreed to buy it.
Okay.
And box stores were at their height. We had a Borders, Barnes & Noble, Media Play, Joseph Beth Booksellers. There were 8 independent bookstores in Charlotte at the time. The market was really saturated.
So you had your doubts, and Sean, I'm going to get to you in a minute because you're going to play a part in this story as well. But
Okay. There's
always a theme in a novel, and usually there's, you know, what does the hero want? What's their goal? It could be save the farm, protect the country from terrorists, or there goes my phone. I got to stop that. Okay.
I thought it was you, not me.
No, I was like, oh, God.
I turned off everything except – I'm going to have to go back. I turned off everything except the computer phone. All right. So I'm going to go back to there's always a theme.
Okay? Sure.
So there's always a theme in a novel. You know, what does a hero want? What's their goal? You know, so it could be save the farm, protect the country from terrorists, or, you know, win somebody's love or something. Sally, what was your goal for the store?
My goal, to sum it up, was love will find a way, because I had a love of hand-selling books. I did it when I was a sales rep, and I wanted to do that in Charlotte. I wanted to make people happy. I wanted new books to come in my life every day.
Mm-hmm.
And love did find a way.
And you wanted a successful store so you could continue to do that.
Of
right?
course, yeah. Everybody. You got to pay the bills. Right. You have to be a business person. You have to be practical, too.
But the interesting thing I found out about this when I read this book, and it makes sense because it happens in so many novels, you don't realize that there's actually 2 parts to the theme. One is saving the farm or making the bookstore successful, for example. But the other is, what does a hero really need? You know, what will fix their life? What will make their arc interesting? How will they go from this person that was one person into another person? Now, we're really psychoanalyzing here.
Oh, boy.
Now, you can talk about it in terms of the store or talk about it. What did you and Parker Books need to complete the arc of your story?
I needed to become more social of a person, actually. I was used to being by myself and selling people one-on-one. I wasn't used to managing employees. Paying bills, being a business owner.
That's really interesting to me because every other person that walks in the door, Sally knows their name.
Right.
I mean, she knows everybody that walks in the store just about.
So the arc is starting to get there, right?
I think so, yeah. So it's interesting that hearing that she didn't have those skills when she first started.
I mean, everybody I run into, my mother's a big, you know, she buys half your books, I think. But, you know, and she always, oh, Sally knows all the books. She comes to, she'll go tell everybody what all the books are, you know. So you get out to the book circuit, right, and you go to the book clubs. And
I will go anywhere to talk about books.
Now, hear that, folks? She'll go anywhere to talk about books. All right, so we know the inciting incident, the debate. We've got the themes here. Act 2, this is where we see the hero in their new world. And the new world is running a bookstore. This is where they say in Saves the Cat, writes a novel, the fun and games take place. You know, where we're introduced to new and supporting characters. Here's where you come in, Shauna.
Okay.
The staff, the loyal customers, et cetera. This is also where the bad guys close in. And sometimes we're all is lost before the hero, with the help of the supporting characters, finds their way. Right?
Gulp.
Gulp. Did we set that up enough? So, Shauna, let's talk about the villains for a minute. Is Amazon a bad guy?
Amazon is a bad guy. Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty easy to prove. I know that for some people it is important and that some people do use it because Amazon has made itself the only source for certain things. But right. As far as books go, there's plenty of other places to get them.
Yeah, it just makes the hero's work more difficult, right?
Sure.
I mean, the independent bookstore and Sally is running it. When you got Amazon out there, they're making, you know, you're thinking, oh, they'll never survive. This book's going to have a terrible ending, right? So what do you do? What do the supporting characters do to help Sally in this arc to make sure that the independent bookstore works and stays alive?
Well, the biggest thing is customer service. You know, we work really hard to make sure that our customers feel welcome, that we give personalized recommendations based on their specific interests, that we are quick and efficient with when we get books and when we notify the customers. We try to do all the things that Amazon can't do. I mean, yes, you can buy a book on Amazon and have it, you know, shipped Prime or whatever, but that book was recommended to you via an algorithm that doesn't know who you are.
It was interesting the other day, I got Amazon sent me a recommendation. They said, that I might like a book called The Christmas Redemption, because I'd actually read The Christmas Heist. And for you listeners, that's one of the books that I've written. So.
I mean, I guess they were technically right.
I thought, yeah, I think I might like that book, but I've already read it.
You might like it.
I've already read it about 85 times. So you're both book lovers, or you wouldn't be working at a bookstore.
I have to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shauna is such a book lover that on her days off, she travels to go to other bookstores.
It's true. I've been on the last couple of months, I've been doing a North Carolina bookstore tour.
Oh, that's cool.
I've gone to, I think, 6 or 7 different independent bookstores in North Carolina that I'd never been to before. It's really fun.
You know, that's kind of like going to all the barbecue places in North Carolina, right? You know, it's somewhere you want to go, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe you can go let's do a barbecue and book tour, you know, the B&B.
And they're all good. That's the beauty of it. You know, barbecue, different barbecues, wonderful. Different bookstores are wonderful.
Right.
They own have their own flavor. They own have their own taste.
Right.
It's exciting.
So to work in a bookstore, you have to know a lot about books. So how do you keep up with all the books, and how many books do you read in a year?
I average about probably 4 books a week.
Reading 4 books a week.
Correct. I don't have any children. My husband does most of the cooking. I have great neighbors that don't care what our yard looks like. I basically, this is my world. I live, eat, breathe, sleep. It's just the world I'm ensconced in, and I love it. I mean, and there's so much that I don't know that it's still exciting. And I anticipate dying with a book in my hand and probably leaned against, a bookshelf in
the
store.
That'll be the very end of the story. Tears coming down our eyes.
Bookshelves above my bed. Yeah. And yesterday when I came home, one of the books on the bookshelf had fallen onto my bed. So I plan on dying buried in a giant pile of books that have fallen on my head while I sleep.
I hope you have paperbacks.
No.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, Sean, we got to get a little, maybe let's build a net above your head and below the bookshelf. We can do that. So how many books do you read a year, Shauna?
I average between 120 to 150 a year.
Holy cow.
I stopped kind of tracking recently just because it's a lot of pressure, I guess.
Yeah.
And there are certain months where I read, 5, 6, 7 books, and some where I'll read 15 to 20. It all really depends on the time that I have, where my headspace is, how busy things are. So it really does depend. This month I've only read 2 books. Oh no. I plan
it's
on.
It's early.
It is. Yeah. And I plan on getting some catch up time.
So when I come in the store, and I'm in there a lot, I come in and I see all y'all busy bees behind the counter there. You're always, you got a little cute. It's kind of like, the air traffic control space or something.
I like that.
Somebody will greet me, of course, and they'll help me, but there's all these other stuff going on. So for the uneducated here, what are y'all doing? What's going on behind the scenes?
We are ordering books. We're looking up books. We're trying to figure out what book it is that the person's come in that they say that they got recommended for their book club that had wife in the title.
We are also calling people with their special orders. Some of us do a lot of web stuff, and so we're working on web stuff, web orders, social media, which is what my job is, events and events planning. There's a lot of things that we do that aren't just, bringing up the book that's in their hand.
Yeah, and a little bit, just a few questions about the book industry. People may not know this, but as an independent bookstore owner, talk about traditional publishers and how you work with them. How does that work anyway?
What they do is they send us sales reps, and these sales reps are in our territory. They know our stores. They know our taste. They come. They have a list. They talk about their books.
They're selling you on what to put on your shelf.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you order from them, and if they don't buy enough, you can send them back or something, or how does that work?
Correct. And you don't want to do that because it's money.
Right, because that takes time.
You
want
to order correctly.
And that's part of the art, figuring out how many to order.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So how do you do that? You look in a crystal ball or something?
Well, you look at past sales, but past sales are not indicative of future sales,
to coin
a commercial. You have to look, this guy sold, 25 books last book.
Mm-hmm.
But this book is about a subject that North Carolinians are going to love.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the Outer Banks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I can sell 40 of them. And it depends when the book comes out. We just put a, we have an author coming this week. In fact, I have his book here, Scott Hewler. And James said, I thought you ordered more books. You thought you wanted more for Father's Day.
This is James, your brother,
who is the manager.
Right. Yep.
And I did. I wanted, this gentleman's coming on Sunday. I wanted copies to be able to sell it through Father's Day, signed copies, because I love this book so much. And we didn't do it. And I was like, oh, we only have 18 books. That's not enough. Yeah. And then, of course, James called up one of our sales reps at a wholesaler and worked his magic and got her to get books out today that we'll get them tomorrow.
So you talked a little bit about working with. What frustrates you sometimes about the publishing industry in general as an independent bookstore owner?
I have an answer.
Go ahead.
The way that publishing allocates funds is always really confusing to me. I'll see a book that I think is absolutely brilliant, and I think it needs all of the support in the world, and publishing has put zero marketing dollars behind it, and then a book that is by an established author that will sell no matter what has all of this publishing and marketing money put behind it. So part of my frustration is I wish publishing put more money into the unsure thing.
So I heard a talk about the publishing industry recently where they talked about how publishers still expect the authors to sell their work to some extent, and only a few authors get the big promotional money behind it. And that goes to your point, Sean, is that sometimes it might not be the best written book, but the person has a name, they're going to pump more money into promoting that than they will something else.
Sure, because it's a business. Right. And so big name author has sold 5 books. Sure. They've all been on the bestseller list. They want to keep that author.
Right.
And so the author is telling the publishing company, well, what are you going to do for me?
Exactly.
So it's a business within a business. And
Okay. Shift to authors real quick. What do you enjoy about working with your authors?
Their enthusiasm. It's so wonderful to see an author champion their own book and to see them champion other people's books as well. I think authors are in the very unique position of being able to, you know, climb up the ladder and then put the ladder back down so someone else can come up after them. And it's really great to see that happening in real life.
Like David Sedaris. David Sedaris starts off his shows. He always recommends somebody else's book. Mm-hmm. He always has a book that he is pushing, touting. So when we go sell books for him whenever he comes to town, we bring multiple copies of the book that he's pushing also, because people trust him. They like his work. So if he likes somebody else's work, they want to read that also.
So there've got to be some suggestions, maybe we'll call them pet peeves, that you might like to make to authors whose books appear in your store. Sally, any thoughts on terms of how they can do better to help, you know, you help them?
We do have a lot of self-published authors. You should really get help. You should get somebody that knows what they're doing, and there's a lot of people out there, Charlotte Writers Network, Charlotte Lit, they can help them do that, because the font has to be good, the paper has to be good, the layout has to be good. There's so many aspects to a book that sometimes I'll pick up a book that I'm so excited about, I've heard about it, and I'll open it up, and I'll think, I don't want to read this. The font is wrong.
Sometimes that could be a traditional publisher.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be.
But you're right. I mean, whether small press or what we call independent publishing now, you do work with independent authors, and you're welcoming in that. But if authors don't realize that they should get an editor, they should get a book designer, they should get a good cover, then they're not doing the complete work, you know, they need to do.
Correct. And it's the weirdest business in the world. So there's a lot of layers and aspects to it.
People do judge a book by the cover. And so your cover has to be something that draws you into the book, but also correctly reflects what the book is about.
So we're playing all these fun and games, and, you know, in the middle part of the book, Act Two here, we're working with, you know, book publishers and customers and authors and everything, and we're doing all our work in the air traffic control center there. And, you know, we get to that phase of the book where, you know, Amazon's just, you know, closing in and all this stuff. What's the current prognosis for the independent bookstore in America?
Good.
It is excellent.
Good. So we're kicking some butt here.
Yeah. I'm happy to say for the past 4 years, we've had a net increase in bookstores in the United States.
Good.
They're popping up all over the country.
All right, so Act 3. We're here in Act 3 now. The hero prevails. Lessons are learned. Goals are accomplished. Now, I sense the story of Parker Books is ongoing, and we're not we don't have the, you know, we don't have to close the book and say happily ever after, but we're at a happy point, right? I mean, we're doing well, right?
We're at a very happy point. We're doing well. We don't owe any money. Mm-hmm. We have wonderful landlords. I'm able to hire more full-timers. Mm-hmm. I am able to give them health insurance. I am hopefully raising their salaries as much as I can. So each success that we have.
Shauna's over here taking notes.
Well, it's always funny because they don't tell me they're doing it. I just look at my pay stub and I'm just like, oh, that's nice.
That's nice. Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so we can't have a podcast about a bookstore without talking about books.
Yay. Right?
And so we're going to do some spring and summer suggestions here. And who wants to go first?
I do.
Okay. All right. So let's do it.
Okay. I'm older than she is. That's the only reason why.
And you're excited about books, right?
Yes. I am so excited. The one I'm most excited about is Martin Clark's book, The Substitution Order. I have known Martin Clark since his first book called The Many Aspects of Mobile Home Living. And I love him. He is my favorite legal writer. He is an ex-federal judge from Stuart, Virginia, which is right up over the line in North Carolina. And he is one of the finest human beings I know and one of the best and funniest writers. He's been called the thinking man's Grisham or the drinking man's Grisham. And he is just, I can't tell you how delightful he is. He's retired now, and I am glad because he can spend more time writing these books.
So, Sally, you had recommended a book he wrote about a year ago, The Jezebel Remedy.
Right.
Yeah, that was a great book, yeah. And didn't he have some health issues too?
He did. He had a stroke out of nowhere. He's a very healthy person,
right.
And he had a stroke that just, you know, almost took his life. He is, you know, his health is regained now. He has quit the, you know, being a judge just because of the stress and strain and pressure on it. But he can do what he loves now. And what I love about Martin is he puts people in his books. So if he likes you, he puts you in his books.
And so you need to get in his book, Sally.
Oh, well, that's I am happy to be the bystander selling his books.
So this is a legal thriller?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And it's about a lawyer who has gone through one of the worst years in his life. He's lost his law practice. He's lost his wife. And he has to work at the worst sub shop in the world called The Substitution.
Oh.
And it really is. I mean, you read the first chapter and you're just groaning. I mean, you're like, no, don't put that on that sandwich.
Yeah. So he starts out with this guy that's down on his luck.
As you said.
Yeah. That's act one. Yeah.
Right. And then somebody or a group of people try to drag him even lower. They are trying to make
those
him.
Those are the villains, the bad
those
guys.
Those are the villains. Yeah. And man, it's sort of like the present day. You're waiting for justice to catch up, but these villains keep coming after him and manipulating him. And the law and everybody else is unable to help him.
Cool. All right, so how do y'all want to do this? Y'all want to alternate back and forth?
Yeah, we should alternate.
Okay,
sure.
So Shauna, what you got for us?
The first one I'm going to talk about is one that we actually have the author coming to visit us on April 18th, which is a Thursday, I believe, at 7. It's called Sugar Run by Misha Marin. It is not something I would typically pick up, but Sally recommended it to me, which is another kind of great thing about the bookstore is Sally can always know which books I'm going to like that aren't necessarily within my normal wheelhouse.
So what's the book about?
So this book is what you would consider grit lit. It's a Southern noir with a main character who has just gotten out of prison after an 18-year sentence. She was convicted of manslaughter and sent to prison when she was 17 years old. So Jody McCarty, the main character, is now released from prison and trying to basically start her new life. So she heads back to the Appalachian Mountains. She falls in love with a woman named Heather, and the two of them try to create this new life together. However, the community is a very uncaring and unwilling to adapt community.
That evil, however.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which
dun,
starts.
Dun, dun.
Exactly. All right, cool. So, yeah, it looks interesting. It says a heady mixture of explosive plot and taut, burnished prose.
The prose is what really gets me. It's beautiful. It's just astonishingly good.
It's a debut novel.
It is, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And she's going to be at the store.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
All right, Sally.
I have A Delicious Country, Rediscovering the Carolinas Along the Route of John Lawson's 1700 Expedition by Scott Hewler. I love this book. John Lawson came from London over to Charleston, 1700. He gets off the boat, and he's like, well, I think I'll take a walkabout. And so he starts traveling around the Carolinas. And, of course, this is by foot and canoe mainly. So Scott Hewler owned some land in Raleigh, and he wanted to know what the land looked like 300 years ago. So he started doing research, and he found out about John Lawson. So he started reading John Lawson's papers, and he was fascinated by it, especially because at this point in time, the Carolinas were so fertile with so many fauna, flora, fish. I mean, it was a delicious, delicious place to be living. And so he recreates this journey. He walks and canoes. And it's just hilarious. I drove my husband crazy reading out passages from it. And especially when he gets to the point, like, he finds a little plot of grass at the Charlotte Motor Speedway to put up his pup tent. And his comments are just wonderful. And it's really delightful to see what life was like 300 years ago.
All right, A Delicious Country. Great. Shauna.
I have a book called Red, White, and Royal Blue. It comes out on May 14th. It is a contemporary romance set in an alternate future, alternate reality. So in 2016, the presidential election resulted in the election of the first female Latina president. And her son, Alex, the first son.
What year was this, 2016?
Yeah.
First female Latina?
Yeah, so instead of Donald Trump, we got the Claremonts. And okay. So the main character.
So Hillary even lost still,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is alternate reality, alternate world completely. Yeah, yeah, so we live in this world, Alex Claremont Diaz is the American equivalent of a young royal, and he ends up having this really toxic relationship with the Prince of Wales that turns from an enemies to lovers romance. So you've got this really beautiful romance written over emails. You've got a lot of politics going on in the background because, of course, you have, this hidden secret romance. And it was really cathartic to read because it's set in a world that's just much more beautiful than our own.
much more accepting, it sounds like.
Yeah. And it's, the familial bonds between the characters are really wonderful to read. The Alex's sister is also a very politically minded person. Even though she's the president, she always has time for her kids. Mm-hmm. It's, like I said, an alternate reality I wish I could live in. It feels like salve on an open wound.
Sally, what's next?
The next book I have is Growing Things and Other Stories by Paul Tremblay. I saw this book. We get advanced reading copies. I saw the book. I started looking at it. I thought, this looks like horror. Mm-hmm. And my husband loves horror. He got his MFA.
The cover does look like you're walking through like a dark forest field or something.
Swamp, yes. Yeah. There's the thorns on it. Yeah. Brought it home to him. He grabbed it out of my hands. He devoured it. And
oh, really?
I will say
so
devoured
it. It is horror?
It's horror. He says, this beats Stephen King's short stories out. And I was like, really? And he's like, yes. And then he made me go get all of his other books and bring them home immediately. So they really are. I've read some of the stories in there, not all of them. The ones that you can see, I've got my sticky
notes.
Yeah,
you got about 5 sticky notes.
Some of them are hilarious. Some of them are super scary. He does great monsters, great tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of everything. I think Paul Tremblay is going to be the next Stephen King without an issue.
That's big there. Okay. Shauna.
All right, jumping into space, I have a book called Once in Future by a co-writing duo, Amy Rose Capetta and Corey McCarthy. Once in Future is a gender-bent King Arthur retelling in space, which
holy
is
cow,
pretty, yeah, it's a pretty great little blurb there. So we have the teenage Ari, who is she discovers and finds things, and she ends up meeting a teenaged Merlin who has been sort of Benjamin Buttoned and is aging backwards. So he's this gangly 15-year-old Merlin, finds Ari, and tells her that she has to save the world using Excalibur. And so the thing about this book is it's fun. It's definitely a lighter read. It does have some serious moments. It definitely has some weight to it, but it's a book that is just kind of this wild romp through space with a found family cast of characters, and the enemy is capitalism, the true villain.
The true villain. We're not doing politics today, but that's okay. All right, Sally, what you got there?
My next one is Tomorrow's Bread by Anna G. Mayhew. This book is Charlotte. It's fiction. It's set in Charlotte, 1961. It's the story of the Brooklyn neighborhood in Charlotte, which
I've heard about this book.
Was demolished to make way for our new modern uptown in 277 Belt Loop. It's told through three people. Laura Lee Hawkins, she's a young mother who must keep her relationship with her white boss a secret. It's also told by Eben Polk, who is a local pastor and caretaker of the African American Cemetery, and Percy Marshall, who is the wife of the man that is leading the efforts to destroy Brooklyn. So it takes place in 1961. Anna G. Mayhew grew up in Charlotte. She's lived in North Carolina her entire life, and it's a wonderful book.
So we've had several authors on the podcast and season two, and then we've got some coming on in season three. They're dealing with some of these socially conscious issues involving Charlotte. Pam Kelly's book, Money Rock, which is in your store as well, talked about the years of Piedmont Courts, which is not far from where we're recording here. And this story about the Brooklyn neighborhood, I think sometimes people just don't realize that there was a thriving African-American community until people decided uptown we needed to tear it down. Or maybe we called it downtown then, you know.
I don't know the answer to that, but correct. There was a thriving middle-class black neighborhood. Right. It had schools, businesses, you know. There was the good, the bad, and the ugly. But mainly it was good, but it was in the way of progress. Mm. And I'm using progress with the air quotes.
Air quotes. All right, Shauna, what you got?
Natalie Tan's Book of Luck and Fortune. It's by Roselle Lim. It's got a June 11th release date. It is Chocolat meets the Joy Luck Club. So it's a very lush visual. It's filled with recipes. It's about Natalie Tan, who is returning to her mother's home in Chinatown in San Francisco after her mother's death. And she is confronted with a neighborhood that's slowly dying and being scalped by this real estate developer who wants to tear the whole neighborhood down and build condos, which sounds kind of familiar, don't you think? So Natalie is a chef by trade, and she decides to use her grandmother's cookbook to heal the wounds in the neighborhood, which that's kind of where the magic comes in. So she makes these amazing dumplings. And so it's got recipes, it's got all of this really interesting, intricate neighborhood with all these characters with their individual problems. And the way that Natalie tries to fix them doesn't necessarily work correctly the first time she attempts it, and she ends up sometimes at some points making it worse. But I think it's this beautiful cultural novel filled with Chinese recipes. The food sounds so amazing, and the recipes are right there in the book. Now, they might not be magical, but they are definitely tasty. And there's just a touch of romance, which, you know, every good book needs.
Right.
So did you make your roommate cook them, Shauna? Or no? I'm teasing.
You know, I should. I should.
And it's, since Shauna's talking about food, I'm going to continue with the food theme. About 15 years ago, I met Matt and Ted Lee from Charleston, and they had their first cookbook, and I love Charleston. My sister and brother-in-law live there. Immediately, my husband and I bonded with Matt and Ted. They have some amazing cookbooks with some amazing recipes, and their new book is called Hot Box, Inside Catering, the World's Riskiest Business. And it's a fascinating look at this business of catering, which is really just amazing that these people can cook a wonderful meal for 500 people and get it out. And how they came about this was about, they went to the James Beard Award dinners, which is set in the James Beard House, which is a real house that has an industrial kitchen in it, but it's a house. and this place manages to crank out all these meals for people. And Matt and Ted Lee were just amazed at these people that came in. And these are not well-known chefs. These are not people that have TV shows. They don't have knives named after them. These are just everyday people dressed in black and white pants and the hat and the white shirts. And they come in and they perform magic. Mm. And it's just a really fascinating book. And it will help you. Even with, if you have a dinner party with only six people, it'll help you deal with your food management a little better.
We're awesome. Really looking forward to having them here in the store.
Yes, May 17th, Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. And Kathy Purvis is going to be interviewing both of them.
Hopefully are they going to bring some snacks. Food?
We will have some food. I'm definitely, they make some of the best, they have the best cheese straw recipe that we've tried.
I love
cheese
straws.
Be drinking cheese straws.
Okay.
And pickled grapes. If you've ever had a pickled grape, it's wonderful.
I haven't, but I will.
You will
I
try
will.
Them.
Okay. All right. Shauna, can you top that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. I do have a book. That's a genre bender. It's called The Psychology of Time Travel by Kate Mascarenhas. It's set in the present as well as 1967. In 1967, four women discover time travel. So sort of a Hidden Figures-esque novel there in the beginning. The four women, they create this device that causes time travel, and one of them kind of has a breakdown, and so she gets kind of shunned from the rest of the group. So in the present, we have this locked room murder mystery. Mm. Someone finds a dead woman in a locked room, and so there's this. It's very complex because you've got time travel, you've got murder mystery, you've got lesbians, you've got all this stuff going on and coming together to create this really intricate novel.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of mystery and intrigue and secrets.
She didn't go through the stones, right? Like in Scotland.
No. And the device has the very specific rules, which when I do time travel books, I tend to like ones that are more structured and have very specific rules for how to time travel works. So it's great if you like murder mysteries. It's great if you like science fiction. It's great if you are just looking for something that you have never read before, because it's very much unlike anything I've ever read.
All right, Sally, what you got?
I've got Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. This is just a delightful book for the people that have gone through all the Harry Potters and you're adults now and you still miss Hogwarts and Harry Potter. It's about a private investigator, Ivy Gamble, who works on the underbelly of Oakland, California. She's sort of bored with, you know, what she does. She's trailing unfaithful spouses, disability claims, until the Osborne Academy for Young Mages approaches her, a teacher at the magical school where they teach kids how to hone their magic.
I wonder where she got these ideas.
I wonder where she did. Yeah. one of the teachers at the school has died gruesomely, and they want to know how this happened. And Ivy's twin sister also works at this school. And they have been estranged. They haven't talked to each other for years. So it's a family drama wrapped around in magic. And just absolutely wonderful and delightful.
Should be fun. Shauna.
I'm going to stick with our kind of fantasy theme.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a book, We Hunt the Flame by Hafsa Faisal. It comes out on May 14th. It is a whirlwind Arabian fantasy set in a land. Zafira is the main character. She's a hunter who braves the cursed forest of Ars, which is sort of encroaching on the land, which is a spooky forest, is one of my favorite
tropes
of all
time. I've got a sense of what Shauna liked to read.
I think maybe, yeah. I think you might have it. so Zafira has to go and retrieve this artifact to stop this forest from encroaching on the land and basically destroying everything. But it's a brilliant novel with magic and intrigue. It's got amazing politics in the book. It's got all these twists and turns. It's a book, when I finished reading this book, I paced my house for a solid 20 minutes. I was so upset. And it doesn't usually, books affect me for sure, but that book has stuck with me so much. It's perfect for fans of young adult crossovers such as Children of Blood and Bone, or adult fantasy novelists who liked books like City of Brass. It is this romantic book. It's got this lyrical prose. It's one of the best books I've read this year.
Wow. So that book's keeping her up at night, Sally. What's keeping you up?
Nothing. I sleep like a log. I do. 10 o'clock comes and I'm like,
All right, we'll talk about another book here.
Okay, I have In West Mills. It's a novel by Deshaun Charles Wilson. This is a debut novel from Winslow. It's Deshaun Charles Winslow, not Wilson. And he is from Elizabeth City, North Carolina. It's debut novel. He's a graduate from the Iowa Writers Workshop. And I loved this book. It's 40 years covering a small group of people in a black community, very small, called West Mills. And you follow these people, especially the main one, from 1941 to the 80s. And it's has everything in it. And the characters are so eminent. It's amazing. The main character starts off, she likes her liquor and she likes her men and not necessarily in that order. And she's upset because Azalea's man is leaving her because she drinks too much. And she's like, that's fine because you can't hold your liquor. And so it's the story of her life and then her two best friends, which are a next-door neighbor who is a married man. It's a platonic relationship. And then her best friend who is a gay man. And it goes through her trials and tribulations. She's a school teacher, but she loves her liquor and she loves her men. She has a couple of pregnancies. But it's a serious book, and his writing is so exquisite. That's the charm of the book.
Might have to give that one to me.
I absolutely. I think you would love it. I mean, it really has everything. It's a period piece, but it's fresh and bright with today's common sense.
Sean, you got something else?
I do. I have a contemporary novel, and this one I will go ahead and give you a disclaimer that I'm very good friends with the author. Mm. The book is called I Wish You All the Best by Mason Deaver. We are having Mason here at the store on May 16th for an event. Their book comes out on the 14th. In the book, we have Ben DeBacker, who comes out to their parents as a non-binary teen. And their parents react by kicking them out. So they move in with their estranged sister and have to start a new life to finish their senior year. While Ben has this idea that they're just going to keep their head down, finish school, and start their new life, a young man named Nathan kind of derails those plans by being the charming young man that he is. Mm-hmm. So it is a coming of age and coming out story with a sweet, tender romance for fans of Becky Albertalli, Adam Silvera, Kelly Lloyd Gilbert. It is a young adult novel, but I think it can speak to anyone of all ages. And I think especially in North Carolina, since we have such a fraught history mm-hmm. of not necessarily being as supportive as we could be to transgender individuals, I think it's a book that everyone should read.
All right. Sally.
My last one is, why don't you write my eulogy now so I can correct it? this is a perfect book for Mother's Day if your mother has a sense of humor. If your mother doesn't have a sense of humor, forget about it. It's by Patricia Marks, who is from Saturday Night Live, and it's illustrated by Roz Chast, who, if you read The New Yorker magazine, you've probably seen her cartoons. I dearly love her. I wish she lived next door to me so I could bug her more. But these are one-liners from Patricia Marks' Mothers and little cartoons that accompany it. So this one says, my mother has no interest in the past other than regretting it. And there's a little picture of a woman sitting on the couch with pearls and her hair's all done. I should have named you Emily Jane. We should have bought the Lentz house. I should have ordered the duck. In retrospect, I should have brought you up better. And then she says, and of course I love this one because I'm the third child in the family. You only need to have one child, but make sure it's the right one.
All right, so you've added humor to your horror and to all your other
exactly.
books.
Exactly.
Yeah. I am one of five kids, so that would think my stepmom might enjoy that.
You got anything else, Shauna?
I do. I have one more. It's called The Wise and the Wicked by Rebecca Podos. It is a dark, magical, contemporary Russian fairy tale set in a small town, America, occupied a family of women who have this magical ability to see their deaths before they happen.
Oh, wow.
So they see their deaths, they write it in a book, and then they live their lives up to that point. Now, the matriarch of the family dies, and when they read the entry in her book, they find out that it's wrong. It has never been wrong before. And so Ruby, our main character, who sees her death only a year in the future on her 18th birthday, it becomes obsessed with finding out how the matriarch of this family cheated death. It's dark, it's lush, it's beautifully written. Ruby is a main character that she's in kind of an anti-heroine. She's not very nice. She's kind of crass. She's basically given up on life and therefore treats life as something that isn't necessarily to be given the weight that it should be, especially as a teen. So she's basically like any, you know, reckless teenager, but worse.
Well, so you have given us a lot of great books to choose from.
And if any of these don't do for you, come to the store and we'll help you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you're a book club and you're thinking about, you know, what books you're going to read for next year, you got this list, or you can stop by the store and talk to Sally or Sean or any of the other people there to help you out.
We're happy to help you any way we possibly can.
Thanks for being on the show, Sally.
Thank you so much, Landis.
Yeah, thanks, Shauna.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Sure. Well, that's it for today. The book experts at Park Row Books have given voice to their work and to the written words of others. If you liked our show, we'd appreciate your help spreading the word. You can do a few simple things that won't cost you a cent. First, just tell your friends. And please subscribe to the podcast. It's free, by the way. And if you really want to help us, leave a short written review on Apple Podcasts, because reviews are kind of like the gasoline that drive traffic to the podcast. If you want to connect with us on social media, if that's your thing, well, we've got social media links, and we've even got a YouTube link now. We've got author videos. And you can get all this at our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com. And if you sign up for our email list at our website, we'll give you a free ebook, a work of fiction written by your host. By the way, if you do sign up, we promise not to spam you. That actually takes too much time, and we just send you periodic updates about the show. And don't forget to stop by Park Road Books and talk to the staff. You know, they're in that little air traffic control area I was talking about. They'll help you out. They'll point you in the right direction. Now, next week, we have another bonus episode. This one is called Remembering Season 1, in which I offer reflections and audio excerpts of readings and conversations from our Season 1 authors. I hope you'll join us. It might help you decide on some episodes you want to listen to in Season 1 that you missed. Until next week, I'm Landis Wade for Charlotte Readers Podcast. Mm-hmm.